Hi everyone, this is Chris McFeely. You're about to listen to a special episode of Fanboy Versus that was recorded with a different cast to normal. But first, I'm joined by my regular co-hosts Nicole Hale and Chris Triplett to share with you some sad news. Shortly after the recording of this show, our fellow host and friend, J.D. Church, passed away as a result of kidney failure. He survived by his wife Amanda, but unfortunately J.D. did not have health insurance and has left some medical expenses. If you're able, please contribute to our fund by visiting tfradio.net/JD and give what you can, because every little helps.
Whew. Okay, JD, you were not just a co-host, but you were a true friend. We had a lot of good times on and off the air. I mean, your texts of encouragement and funny little jokes made my day. And I'm definitely going to miss the times talking about sports in front of Chris and Chris and making them go crazy. that was one of my favorite things to do. Every time I throw my terrible towel up in the air, I'll be thinking of you. And just a short and sweet aloha A until we meet again. I love you, JD, and I'll miss you so.
Hey guys, Chris Triplett here from Fanboy Versus. You know, me and JD and the rest of the guys, we did several episodes of Fanboy Versus together. But I never myself found it easy, since I'm not very good at talking. But JD never had any problems doing the podcast. He was very good at it, and I'm honored that I got to join him on the show. When I heard the news about him, I was in complete shock. I couldn't believe that he was gone. I consider JD to be my friend, and I like to think that he thought of me in the same way. I'll never forget the random conversations I had with him, either on the podcast or off of it. It was not uncommon for him to just send me a random message over Google Talk asking me about something he read or watched on TV. I loved our arguments on the podcast over Ghost Rider and missed them immensely. JD, he just had this amazing ability to just make you instantly like him. He was the friendliest person I know, and I will miss him very much.
I think like you guys, I really came to know JD through the work together we did on the show. And I never had the pleasure of meeting him in person, but the collaborations that we had online were never anything less than great fun, whether it was busting each other's chops about something or coming up with memorable nonsense like Sherwood or Themyscira High.
Yeah.
But, you know, in addition to all that stuff, JD always made sure that serious issues like feminism and diversity were a regular part of the talks we would have on Fanboy Versus, and I really believe I learned a lot about those subjects from talking about them with him. I legitimately consider myself richer for having known him, and I think we're all poorer for his loss. Those themes are a big part of this episode that you're about to listen to, and I like to think that JD would have been proud that we could keep that going on Fanboy Versus. We miss you, JD, and well, wherever you are now, this one's for you, buddy. Hello, and welcome to a special episode of Fanboy Versus. We've been off your internet, air, waves, whatever, for a while now. And in the intervening months, there have been a lot of good new books coming out in comics that I haven't been able to tell you about, that I haven't been able to share the love on Superior Foes of Spider-Man, which was my favorite pick for best new title of 2013. I haven't been able to tell you about my belated discovery of the excellent Bandette, or about Image's recent launch of Pretty Deadly, all these great new books that I really would have liked for there to be a Fanboy Versus episode so that I could share them. But now, in the new year of 2014, Marvel has launched their all-new Marvel Now initiative, the second wave of Marvel Now, following on from last year's big launches. And there's a lot more off-the-wall, off-center, B-list, C-list, D-list, Z-list books coming out in this wave of titles. And one has come out in particular that gave me that feeling again where I said, I really wish I had a Fanboy Versus so I could talk about this. And that book is Ms. Marvel, number one. And I decided I would do something about that. And so I have assembled my dream team of reviewers to come on and talk about this book, who I will now let introduce themselves to you.
Hey, this is Alice Meerman, which is kind of the secret identity of Sprite. And I can be found on Facebook and Twitter under that name.
And you're well known for being on the IDW forums talking Transformers.
That too, absolutely, yes.
yeah, so I'm Izza, and I'm on Tumblr, Facebook, Twitter, blah, blah, blah. And I'm mainly not in superhero comics at the moment, but coming back into it. This book, so yeah.
And I am Temple, human name Dave, but nobody really uses that. So yeah, Temple on Facebook or Tumblr and everything. I am an equal parts Transformers nerd and Marvel nerd, so hopefully that should be helpful.
My brother. We're all Transformers nerds here, but
yeah.
as is the usual, well, we all are on Fanboy.
We might steer around to Transformers in a minute, you know.
It may come up, you never know. But like North Normal and Fanboy Versus, we try to steer away from the Transformers books because we know that there are plenty of other websites and places covering that. And heck, we're part of a network that has its own dedicated Transformers podcast that already talks about the books every week. So that's why on Fanboy Versus, we've always tried not to. But sometimes those Transformers books, they're so good that they just have to be talked about, much like this one, I think. So I'm going to give you a quick rundown of Ms. Marvel number one. If you haven't read it, you really should if you haven't. I think that'll be the overriding takeaway of this show, is that if you haven't, you really ought to. But chances are you've probably heard about it, because Ms. Marvel has been grabbing a lot of headlines for its central character. It's one of those things that Marvel does where... You won't catch too many comic series being launched in this day and age, not just Marvel, DC as well. You won't catch too many comics being launched with brand new names. Branding is important. And so Ms. Marvel, which was, you know, formerly the identity of Carol Danvers for 40 years, 30 years, thereabouts. She became Captain Marvel just over a year ago now. And so Ms. Marvel is getting repurposed as the new identity of a brand new character named Kamala Khan, who is introduced to us in this first issue. Like, literal brand new character getting their own number one, which is something that has not happened in a very, very long time, which is part of the significance behind this book as well, I think. Kamala is a Pakistani-American 16-year-old girl from Jersey. She is a huge... she's a huge superhero fangirl. She writes Avengers fan fiction. She uses it's not named as Tumblr, but you know, she's social network savvy, shall we say. She is just a thoroughly normal girl all around who also happens to be Muslim, and finds herself struggling to enjoy her young life in the face of the rules that her religion and her parents enforce upon her. And one night, when she sneaks out to a party, she suddenly finds herself enveloped by a mysterious bank of mists, and when she awakens, she finds she's got herself some superpowers. That's your basic front-to-back summary of the issue. And I'm sure we'll go into more detail as we go through it here now. But who would like to start us off on where they heard about this and why they decided to pick it up?
Somebody just fell off my wall, sorry.
I think that's nominated you then. You can go.
That was fucking terrifying. Not the posters on my wall, okay. Anyway, I think I found an article about it on, maybe it was the Mary Sue, that website, maybe on there, something like that. And, instantly grabbed my attention because, well, for a start, I was like, awesome, new female superhero. But then the fact that she was a Pakistani-American, but a Pakistani superhero caught my attention as well because I'm part Pakistani. So I was like, oh, sweet, Marvel are trying to do something new and fresh and bring in characters of different origins and backgrounds, which is pretty sweet. So, yeah, that was what grabbed my attention instantly.
I think I've read something on other articles that this is part of a women's initiative. Like Marvel's having this women's initiative to have more titles with, female-led titles or something.
Yeah, they don't feel like they played it like that out of the gate, you know? It's kind of like they waited until a bunch of them had been announced, and then they said, aha, what we were really doing was... Because I think we all know comic book fandom, sadly, well enough to know what kind of... Well, I mean, I was going to say, what kind of reaction the announcement of some kind of women's initiative thing would garner from the male-driven forums. But let us not pretend that, sadly, that reaction did not come up just for Kamala alone.
Yes, I think I first noticed it on Twitter, the announcement. I think by the time I'd heard about the book, I don't really want to say backlash, but I think that the first of the negative reactions were just showing then.
To be honest, I've seen far less negative reactions than I expected to see.
Yeah, there was an initial burst, but I think as the release of the book got closer, I think people were actually getting more excited about it rather than anything else.
And I knew about the like female characters initiative thing, but I actually only found out about that like a couple of days ago after the book had come out. So yeah, like you said, I didn't think they sort of pushed that as sort of like the reason for this new character coming out. They just sort of did it anyway, which is sort of the best way to do it, really. Because they're just like, fuck all of you, we're just going to do what we want.
Because, as far as the Women's Initiative thing goes, I mean, this month has given us, or last month, I should say, January has given us a Black Widow ongoing series. And this month has brought us Miss Marvel, and She-Hulk launches this coming week as well. And I forget the exact release date of it, but Elektra is getting a new series as well. So, everybody there is, pre-established character except Kamala. And now, I have to be honest, I can't remember exactly where I first heard about it. It was probably just through one of Marvel's normal announcements. All this stuff tends to blur together for me when I'm a retailer because it all comes out of catalogs, and I don't remember if I heard it first on the internet or read about it in a catalog or whatever. But I have to be honest and say I wasn't, it didn't grab my attention in any special way. I wasn't particularly planning to pick it up, but it was when I read the short story starring the character that Marvel released in their all-new Marvel Noi 0.1 trailer book, as I sometimes like to call them. When was that? Late December, I think, or early January, whenever it was.
Yeah, first week of January, I think.
That's when it was. I thought, hey, this is actually like a lot of fun. I like this character. I'm that's one of those times where the marketing really worked on me. They said, hey, here it is, and I was like, hey, yeah, I'm gonna buy this now.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad that I did.
I'm glad you did too.
I know. I feel like a better person. I mean, I was at least on the fence about it because Adrian Alfona is doing the artwork for this. Our creative team for Miss Marvel is written by G. Willow Wilson, who is known as the author of the Vertigo series Air. I think her first graphic novel was under Vertigo as well. I mean, it's called Cairo. And the artist is Adrian Alfona, who is best known as the artist of Runaways. Which most of us here have read or are in the process of reading.
Oh, such a subtle dig, Chris.
No, it wasn't intended to be. I was just saying, Temple, you've read it, right?
Yep.
Okay. Well, now it has turned into a dig.
Let's just gang up on her. It's fine.
I keep telling you, I've got too much fucking
after
work.
School, I know. Sprite, how far into Runaways are you now?
I've read the first four volumes, and the next...
Oh, you read the whole thing, then?
The ones that I got.
That whole
and
set,
The next big haul from Argonia, which is the a Belgian-based web store where I get a lot of trades, comic trades, I'll get the rest.
Excellent. Well, I'm Adrian Alfona was the artist of Runaways, and frankly, I mean, I remember, and... I'm trying to remember, if you're four volumes in, you've probably seen it yourself, Temple, I think you'll definitely know what I'm talking about, is how much Alfona's artwork evolved even over the course of his time on Runaways.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
he was never generic, but he's really got this really distinctive style now.
I got to say, I don't remember where I first read about Ms. Marvel either. It's probably through one of you guys. But it's really the art that grabbed me.
Yeah,
it's
that
like
was
just
the, that
just
was,
those sketches, those designs. Was like, yeah.
Yeah, the design, like I remember seeing the picture of her wearing like the black t-shirt and it like cuts off above her mouth, and the character designs for her and her family, and the artwork is absolutely amazing. The clothing design was stunning, which yeah, I found that really good because some superhero comics really have terrible clothing for their characters when they're not in costume.
See, I could never make that observation. You've had the misfortune of looking upon me in real life. You know I'm not a fashion magnate. I just like costumes. Yes, exactly. Yeah, you have that the eye for that. And I honestly, but now that you know, now after you said it, and I looked back through the comic, I was like, oh yeah, really? Look at that, yeah. I mean, Alfona's art. To be honest, I mean, if you hadn't told me it was him and you put it in front of me, given my previous knowledge of him from Runaways, I don't know that I would have recognized it was him off the gate. There's a slightly more. He was always slightly cartoonish, and he certainly became more so over the time that he worked on Runaways. But this is another thing again, and. It was really just seeing how absolutely gorgeous the artwork on the thing was that really convinced me to go for it, in addition to how fun the character was. Ian Herring is actually credited for the... He's not credited as the colorist. He's credited as for color art on this comic, which I think probably says a lot about the contribution he's making to it as well.
It does have a definite sort of really distinctive color palette, actually.
Yeah, it's like a soft palette.
Yeah.
Yeah, lots of browns and greys and
it's really watercolor. It's like watercolors.
Yeah, that's what I thought as well. It's all the colors, even if they're not like pastely browny colors, they feel really soft.
Mm-hmm.
Even like the stark red on Iron Man's suit and stuff like that.
Stark red.
That wasn't.
Nah.
And it was.
So I think we'll just dive in to talk about the whole Muslim aspect of the thing, since that's what all the press has been on. We've seen in the last couple of years various attempts by various companies to tick the diversity box, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's impossible to not at least recall DC's recent attempt in the last, what was that, about a year ago, year and a half ago, at introducing an Arab-American character of their own in Simon Baz, the new Green Lantern character, who made a brave and bold step for Muslims in comic books by wielding a handgun and getting framed as a car bomber.
DC!
DC!
Yeah.
Reset the counter.
Yeah. I mean, the character proved himself quite fairly worthy in his own regard, but the fact that that was how they felt they had to frame the introduction of the character was one of those, yeah, shake your head, you know? That's just kind of the way DC does things these days.
That's how they roll.
Extreme and from the bleak end of things. Comparatively, a couple of, I think it's, how long has he been knocking about now? It's at least 2 or 3 years now we've had Miles Morales in our lives. So for in the Ultimate Universe, another character about whom much furore was created whenever he was revealed that he would be the new Spider-Man, a half-black, half-Latino character.
Even though I've been in superhero comics for like a few years now, I remember that, and it was horrible.
That was truly awful. Marvel were honestly brave enough to print a lot of the negative letters that they got in the letters page of Ultimate Spider-Man 2. It's one of those pleasant things where I did read them, you know, and I read, much like I read the letters pages in books like Avengers Arena or
yes.
Avengers Academy after they did their, which one was the issue that garnered all the controversy in Avengers Academy? I've forgotten.
Oh, the origin story of, what's his name?
Was it Stryker?
The electric guy. Stryker.
Or was it Was it his origin story, or was it some? Well, was it something to do with a gay character? I can't even remember now, because the whole controversy aspect of it has fallen away so much, and he became such a fixture of the book. And it's always pleasant when you read these letters pages and you see the negative letters slowly, slowly fall away and nothing but, you know, support come in. I mean, comics are generally speaking, a very liberal medium, more so than a lot of other film and television.
Because they are, but I feel like there's like a split in both in creators and in fans. Sometimes it feels that way, where it's like part of the fandom and the people who are into comics are really liberal, and then there's this like other part that's just this really hardcore fan base who don't want anything changed, and everything has to be like it was in the 40s. And it's just really weird, because I would always say like, yeah, well, comics, art, liberal, but then you find people saying like, Donald Glover wants to be Spider-Man, we should fucking kill him, that nigger, like that, and you're like, oh my god, what are you saying? Like, do you not see yourself, like what you're saying and why it's so horrible?
I think it might also be that the comics industry in America is pretty conservative in its own way, because you've got like a mainstream comics, which are, when you get down to it, really narrowly defined. It's superheroes, and that's what it is. And you've got your indie comics and the smaller press and all those that are basically doing the liberal things. But yeah, it's really weird to have an entire media, which it is. It's comics aren't a genre. They're a medium. Defined by one genre, really.
Yeah, I remember a friend saying that to me, like, I think I was like 14, and that was when I was like reading superhero comics, and my scope of comics was basically limited to superhero comics, and I kind of had the view of like, all comics are superhero comics, and he was just like, well, no. And that was like the moment I found out about indie comics and sort of moved into like that a bit more. Opened up my eyes to what comics could be as a storytelling medium as well.
I mean, in Europe, it's not so much. I mean, superheroes in Europe never really took the hold that they did in the States. So you still get sort of a wider range of genres in European comics. But
yeah, I guess I'm pretty lucky in that I started out with, well, basically comics in Dutch, which were a lot of translated stuff, a lot of Belgium comics. And the range of it was just, well, bigger, and was definitely different from American, well, superhero comics, which I got into later. And I started out collecting comics with ElfQuest, which is one of the first original successful self-published comics, which was very, very different. It still is. They've started publishing new comics now, and it still has its very own voice, very own identity in the whole world of comics.
So, with a character like Miles Morales, the storytelling route has been to treat him shockingly like a normal human being, and to just—I mean, his race is simply not a factor in his stories at all, like in any way, really. Which is perhaps slightly odd in itself. I mean, it's a perfectly fine way of doing it. And so going into Ms. Marvel number one here, I wondered what way were they going to do it. I mean, Muslim, that's a hot button word in America right now, you know. And I was wondering what way they were going to play it. And for any of those wondering who haven't read the book, it does have to be said that the Muslim stuff is all very much at the fore of the book. But what really impressed me about it, and which really, I feel like I probably shouldn't have been as impressed by it as I was, because it's such a simple way of doing it, but it's all done in service of themes that are absolutely universal to any young person of any faith. Kamala is someone who feels alienated and unpopular with her peers, because she happens to be Muslim. To my mind, it's the same way Peter Parker felt alienated and unpopular among his peers because he was a science nerd. You know, and that is, in essence, what it means to Kamala and to this series. Rather than being a tract about the Muslim faith. It really is a story, a very, very classical story of an alienated young person who gets the power to change their life.
Yeah.
And I realized that after I'd thought about it for a while, I was having a conversation with someone on Twitter, I forget who it was. It really is so classically Marvel.
I mean, this is really meat and potatoes, Marvel, isn't it? This is what they've built their name on.
This is real classical Silver Age origin Marvel stuff here.
Yeah, like teenagers struggling with real life plus superpowers is pretty much what they do.
It's quite interesting because I've seen the comparison with Peter Parker made a lot with regards to this book. Like she's a lot like him in ways.
But not in any ways that you could directly compare the characters and their personalities or anything. It's just the trappings of the storytelling. I mean, people say that, you know, there's no diversity in comics, and I think in large part we can point to that being it does spin out from the fact that the last time that there were any really hugely popular characters created was in like the 60s running through to maybe the mid 70s. Marvel and even DC, there have been many attempts in the intervening couple of decades to introduce brand new characters and hopefully have them take off, but they don't stick. It's not, you know, the white characters, the black characters, it's really not, you know, there are many brand new white characters who have proven massively unpopular produced between the 70s and now as well. And every once in a while, Marvel does try their hand at creating a new Peter Parker type character. Nova was their big attempt at doing it in the 1970s. And actually, they tried it again with Nova just last year. Did Temple, did you read the Jeff Loeb Nova series?
I read the first couple of issues, and then I was suddenly reminded why I haven't read any Jeff Loeb in the last few years.
Thuddingly competent.
It was staggeringly mediocre.
And it's because you could... And with that, it's like you could see all the pieces. There's the matriarch character, the absent father figure, there's the girl he likes that he won't get with, there's his bully, and there's just absolutely nothing new done with the idea at all. And Kamala doesn't really add a lot, you know, take that formula and twist it up in any special way. It's just...
Although I love that she has an actual living, healthy family. I mean, her family members, yeah.
I mean, her family, it's like it's all done up in Muslim trappings, as I say. She's got when it comes down to it, you describe it. She's got an overbearing mother who's pressuring her to do well in school. She's got a slightly softer father who maybe understands that she needs a bit of freedom, but she's still his daughter. And she's got a completely work shy, lackadaisical brother. And these are all tied up in the Muslim in the Muslim trappings, as I say, where her mother wants these very specific things that it's sort of the stereotypical expectations, and the brother is only work shy because he professes he can't find a job that won't offend Allah. I really love
those characters. That is my granddad's family. Like they're completely accurate. It's hilarious. Like my granddad on my mum's side was basically like a very much stricter version of Kamala's dad. I actually got the vibe of him being a lot stricter than maybe you did, because you said you felt like he was a bit more relaxed.
Tell you what, that is
that's the point one. I think he's a lot softer.
Yeah, I'm a bit more informed by the short point one story where we do. Yeah, I mean she really just has the mother calls her down for dinner and despairs about this fanfic she's writing. And then the dad, you know, loses temper with her when she answers back. But we see when I say that, I am a bit more informed by the point one where the mother is really raging because she's late to a bridal shower and the dad's like, we've got to give her some space, you know. So, yeah.
I think maybe it's just that the father is a bit more progressive. Not so much less strict, but more aware.
Well, you can tell by, again, by his costume, he's wearing a sort of business suit, and he, while he clearly is someone who considers his faith really important, he frowns upon the fact that the brother is using his faith as an excuse to be lazy and separate himself from society, whereas he is very much immersed in whatever is going on in his life, his job. And he's saying to the brother, like, look, you can't just use the fact that you're praying as an excuse to not do anything, go and get a job. So he's obviously someone who is trying to marry those two things together, and that, I think, is something about Kamala as well that's really important, is that she's not rejecting Islam in this story, which is one thing I was worried about, honestly, when I heard about it, was that I kind of thought they might go down the path of her deciding that Islam is bad and she wants to pursue being a superhero and reject it, but what she's actually trying to do is find a way to merge the different aspects of her life together without being disrespectful towards anyone from any parts of those aspects of her life, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's not that she's rebelling against her faith, it's that she's rebelling against her parents.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's actually set in the comic. I think it's because we're talking about Muslim a lot, I think it's, to me, it was more about culture and the whole Pakistani culture that stood out to me, not so much religion. I mean, the religion was part of that, but...
Yeah, I apologize for any gross generalizations I'm making here, but I am not educated. I don't
white people.
I know, we all look the same.
It's just that I've always been interested in all the cultures and stuff. So I really and I'm a linguist, so I really picked up on like the words, the terms that I use with regard to family members like Abu, Ama, Ami.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that because. When she first said it, I think the first thing she says is Abby to her mum, isn't it? Ami.
I think Ami.
Yeah.
It's Ami.
And I'm like, well, and at first I was like, is that her name? Or and then I very quickly came to the way that the story is written, it's not, you know, it doesn't just throw these terms out there and sort of expect you to get them without any clarification. But the way the dialogue works and the way the terms are worked into it, you can always pick up what they mean. It's very well considered for white people.
I always like that in a story. I always like stories
that's really important because it allows for people who aren't of that culture or who don't have an understanding of that culture to realize that there are things that are similar between them and someone else from that culture, and that maybe there are differences, but it's not so wildly different that it's something to be feared, which is, I think, where a lot of sort of prejudices come from, is a lack of understanding. So this allows you to understand it better without feeling intimidated by it, I think.
Definitely. You know, I remember seeing some comments from people who said that they felt a little uncomfortable reading the book, and I think that was it's just a sense of not getting it. But most of them said they felt they'd learned something by the time they got to the end of the book.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you said there about how you saw your grandfather's family in this, I think that leads us on to an important point in this book, that I'm a white guy. I'm a straight white guy in a very white country, Ireland. So... the idea of representation, Temple, you can weigh in on this as well. We've grown up in a world...
As a 30-something, you know, white male atheist, I think I think I'm perfectly good to comment on Kamala.
Yeah, well, this is it.
It shows the universality of the story, I think, that, you know, you still sympathize with her, you feel what she's going through, without necessarily having the cultural background to fully, you know, get it.
Yeah, yeah.
See, today I was just making my boss read this, because I was telling him, we got a lot of posters in today, the new delivery in today, I was putting posters of Miss Marvel up all around the shop, and he said, what are all these posters? There's a whole lot of them up, and I was like, well, let me tell you! and I dug a copy out, and I said to him, go and read that while you're having your tea. And he enjoyed it, but he just thought it was grand, and I was trying to explain to him, it's like, I don't think you get the significance of what's happening here. And he was trying to make the case, and I'm not down on him, this illustrates the point I'm going to make here, is that he was trying to make the case that he never felt he needed to relate to a protagonist in order to enjoy a comic. And I never really got the chance to probably talk it out with him and say, yeah, but you're a straight white guy.
Yeah, yeah, so you're in every comic.
Yeah, you're in every comic, and you don't realize that you're in every comic.
Yeah.
That's the norm to you. And it's not on your radar. It's something I've slowly been coming to realize myself lately as I'm trying to educate myself on these matters a bit more. Not doing very well about it, I'm trying. It's just the idea of it, it's not been... the idea of seeing yourself in media, in fiction, in comics. Like, Steve Rogers doesn't represent... Captain America doesn't represent all white guys.
Yeah, but that's the thing, because there are so many white male characters.
Yeah, you're bound to find one.
There's just like this huge variety, and then when another thing I was concerned about with Kamala was that she would come to be like an icon, a representative of all Muslim girls, which, because there's only one of her, is more likely to happen. Because that kind of character is so rare. Mm-hmm. But she's so well written and well rounded that she's just a good character, and a good character and a good story will appeal to anyone, no matter what race or gender they are. But it's still important that, you know, young Pakistani girls can find a character that looks like them, has a family like they do, and same for anyone of any other race.
I've been trying. That just sort of dawned on me suddenly. I was like, wait, and I suddenly grasped the other level that this was working on. Guess as the idea that we are all media, but we don't see it because it's kind of, we're on the inside looking in, and it's the people and the other genders and the faces of other races and creeds and colors who do see it. And I mean, Marvel is the one that's really seems to be trying to make decent steps towards. Marvel and Gail Simone are the ones who are trying to do something about this, and you know the that's like you said. It's the great thing about the character is, yes, she's a Muslim, but she's also a teenage girl, and she is very much a teenage girl of today, writing her fan fiction and getting.
Yeah, that's the other thing it's not like fan service, but it's acknowledging it's. Conscious of who its fan base, a large portion of its fan base are, and that is a lot of teenage and girls in their 20s and stuff are now getting into comics mainly because of the movies, because they're so popular. Like on Tumblr, there are so many, I've seen so many girls who've got into reading superhero comics because they love the Marvel movies, and that's a fan base who deserve to be catered to, not Absolutely. Ignored.
And then on the next level up from that again, the absolutely universal themes of just young people feeling alienated are something that just about anybody can relate to, even if you are a 30-something white guy. You remember?
Well, yeah, I mean, your parents not letting you go to a party. That's literally
that's
everybody's childhood.
Ever.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's also like. That is something that's so... I think I've said this already, actually. Like, the fact that a white boy, say, who's, like, 14 and reads this book, could see a 16-year-old Muslim girl who has, like, a similar problem to him where her parents don't let her go to a party. And then he realises, like, oh, well, maybe people like that aren't so horrifically different from me. And that teaches someone to be more conscious and accepting of other people, which is what media should be trying to do with diversity. So that's something that really struck me about the book. I think I've said that twice now, but I don't care because it's important.
It's a point worth reiterating. What was I going to say? We were talking about Tumblr there, and this is another part of this conversation I was trying to have with my boss today, was that I was trying to explain to him about the changing demographics and the nature of the female fandom. I'll just digress here to talk about female fandom for a minute. I think we all know that, particularly in hobbies, fandoms, like superhero comic books, or we're all Transformers fans, Transformers or other sci-fi properties like that, that are predominantly recognized as male-led fandoms. I don't think it's any secret that the environment that the predominantly male fandom can create on a message board or in a comic book shop can sometimes be considered, and I say sometimes, more often than sometimes, can be considered hostile or unwelcoming to female fans. And Tumblr, we can talk about Tumblr, has provided a platform that has really not existed before for female fans to gather. Now, I guess DeviantArt kind of filled the role for a while.
Although that DeviantArt was a very, very mixed website, but there seemed to be a huge fandom presence on it as well.
And but Tumblr has come along and really served as a rallying ground for... this is not a knock on Tumblr, but I don't think there's another social media platform that has gained an identity the way Tumblr has. Does that make sense? You know, whenever somebody says, "Oh, Tumblr is reacting to whatever," and everybody knows what you mean.
People say this shit about Tumblr, but Tumblr is not one single entity. It's thousands of users, and there will, like, obviously people in any situation on any website who react the strongest to get the most attention. And that's why, you know, the Westboro Baptist Church are the people who everyone goes like, "Oh, Christians are all like the fucking Westboro Baptist Church." And, like, you see all the negative comments more than you see anything else. So people have this, like, idea that all of Tumblr is, like, this horrible place where, you know, if you're a straight white dude, we're going to fucking kill you and stuff like that.
I don't have a Tumblr. I'm afraid.
But there are some people like that on there, but then I think Tumblr is actually a really, really good place for fandom. I've, like, discovered a lot of interesting TV shows and stuff through it. And, I do occasionally joke about how extreme some people they can be. You get extreme people on every website. Like, I was on a Pokemon forum once where literally half the user base were 15-year-old middle American Christian boys who were, like, concerned about the fact that there was evolution in Pokemon, and would this go against their Christian beliefs? And I was literally just like, "What are you people talking about? I've got to leave this forum." I don't even know what my point was there anymore. I went off on such a tangent. This is my ability to relate Pokemon to anything.
Well, I think it's the fact that Tumblr has provided a platform for people to raise and talk about, to various levels of extremes, these very important issues. And I'm not sure why it is with Tumblr, but it seems to have allowed for a greater level of communication with the people who are actually producing this media, or if not communication, a real sense that the message is being heard, even if it's maybe making it out in a slightly warped way, or creating the viewpoint that all of Tumblr is like this. I think the important aspects of it are getting through, and this is what I was trying to explain to him. You know, I think I remember reading that polls have shown digital comics readership has gone from 10% female to fully 25%, a full quarter recognized as female readers, and that's a big change.
Yeah,
I think it goes back like to what you were saying about some comic shops not being the most welcoming environments, and I think they've got a lot better lately.
Yeah,
I know my local's supremely welcoming to everybody, but I think digital comics have maybe allowed a different way to get your comics without any of that sort of hang-up to it.
Without having to venture near. And I mean, there is the idea that comic shops present an environment that's not welcoming to female readers. There are a lot of comic shops that present an environment that's not welcoming to damn near anybody.
I have seen the pictures.
Anyway, when I was younger, like, before I was allowed to do anything by myself, and I wanted to go to, like, a shop that sold Pokemon cards and comics and stuff like that, and my mum was literally just like, all these 40-year-old men playing with their Pokemon cards, they're really weird, I don't want you going anywhere near them.
Dingy, below street level, unwindowed shop. And we've all been in a shop that's been like that, I'm sure.
I was telling you last night about Orbital Comics in London and how it's moved and changed and stuff like that, and the first time I went there, it was literally like you went through this tiny door that basically you wouldn't have noticed if there hadn't been a bunch of superhero posters outside of it. And then immediately there's just this tiny staircase, like really narrow staircase with superhero posters plastered all along it. And you have to walk down this tiny staircase into basically a dude's basement filled with comics, and that was the shop.
Never trust a shop that does not like natural light.
That's an immense truth. I have been in a lot of them like that. And I think they're definitely on the decrease now, but it's important to be bright and welcoming welcome in the norms.
Shops should not be frightening, I think is the main rule.
So we kind of got off topic there for a moment.
It was inevitable, really, though, wasn't it?
It was, but these are all facets of the same... I think they're all facets of the issues that... the existence of this book is maybe not step one, but maybe the big pointy spearhead of an initiative to change.
Yeah, the main character is a young girl who's relatable for a lot of young women who are getting into comics right now, who are maybe finding that it's not as much of a welcoming environment as they would like. So yeah, what you just said.
I mean, you use that word, relatable, that's something... Now, the same week that Ms. Marvel number one came out here... See, I have plenty of female customers in my shop. I think we create an environment that's pretty welcoming to everybody. But like I said, I'm a 30-year-old white dude. I don't really know. You know, I'd like to think, but I can't tell if I'm doing anything wrong or not. I try to tell, but you know what I mean.
You can ask. I mean, I presume you have
a girl. No.
Talk to women.
Well, you could have an evaluation sheet or something like a questionnaire that you hand out to customers.
Did you feel comfortable in my shop?
Did any guys bother you while you were there?
Were they wearing a fedora?
I can at least thankfully say that nobody has ever come into my shop wearing a fedora. I think I'm going to say...
Concerning the relatable aspect, I think it's very important that
not just
girls relate to her, but I've seen guys on forums say that they relate to the character as well, and I think that's also important because we want that audience as well.
This does not and should not be should not is maybe not the wrong word, but it shouldn't just be a book that's just targeting teenage girls but it's like we said earlier, a good character is a good character and a good story, and this should be readable by anybody and everybody, and that's what it puts me in mind of the classic Peter Parker origin story, but even more so than Amazing Fantasy 15, I feel like it really it's really reminiscent of Ultimate Spider-Man number one. It's much the same way with Ultimate Spider-Man number one. If I had a complaint I wanted to levy against the book, it's that I was maybe hoping we would get a little further along into the story than we did where it ended.
It should be noted that there are no actual superhumans in issue one, except imaginary ones.
Well, have you seen the party scene? there's a giant frog in the party scene. There's a person on fire. There's...
Good God, there are actually, aren't there? What's going on here?
I think they're just in jokes.
Oh, shit, there is.
Noticed?
Oh, no, I hadn't. No.
That's the art. That's really the art. I really love it. It's really playful, and there's actually a lot
on dancing and a guy with an axe chasing a woman. What?
I know.
Like blue bear thing in the bushes.
Yeah, I just noticed that.
Guy's holding
There's just all these little jokes that
a robot as well in the middle.
It's all these little jokes in all these little jokes in the art. All these jokes.
Look at the scene.
Funny stuff. It's like an...
you know the bit when the panel underneath that where you see just Kamala walking through, there's just a guy lying face
down. Yeah, they're just stepping over him.
A guy with a bow and arrow
behind there. Yeah, look at that.
If you go to the first page, there's a lot of funny stuff in there as well. Like there's this fire extinguisher that says like "die fire die."
Yeah,
all these little comments and stuff.
And the thing saying cashiers are not interested in your stories.
It's
I love
true.
That.
Yeah. relatability. Yes, that's what I was going to say. I have plenty of female customers. That's what they're saying. And there are plenty of books that I can feel like I can recommend to teenage female customers. But there's a difference between recommending a book that I think will appeal to them and recommending a book that I would think would relate to them, if you know what I mean. The same week that Ms. Marvel number one came out, Loki Agent of Asgard came out. Temple, you read that?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, well, and Sprite, you're
Sprite pretty much made me.
But you're trade waiting, right, Sprite?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the first scene of that is Loki stepping out of the Shire. You know, that's a book that none of the audience. But that's the difference between appealing to your audience and relating to your audience. Stupid sexy Loki, as I've been calling him.
Well, I think that comes back to the point of the importance of representation. Like the it's important that female characters, that the women are represented in comics, mm-hmm. not just for girls and women to see themselves in the comics, but I think for men as well, because I've been talking a lot about the underrepresentation of women in media and the effect it might well have on society. Like there's
it pretty much just creates this really bizarre thing where you have so few female characters that if you only have like one or two female characters in one story and everyone else is dudes, then they end up just representing all women with one character, and then she ends up just being like this really hollow feeling non-character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're often characterized by being a woman.
Yeah. As if that's
even if the male characters are stereotypes, they're still different stereotypes.
Yeah.
Like you've got the nerd and you've got the jock and you've got the hero type, and
they parried so well in Warriors.
But it often happens that being a woman is considered a stereotype, not just an alternative option for gender.
Mm.
They're often treated like that, and it's often like if you've got one female character that has to carry the burden of womanhood, and the tendency is to make her ultra ultra good, ultra capable and stuff, and that makes her really bland.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't feel educated or entitled or appropriate enough to really speak on the issue of feminism at all, but like what you described there is, to my understanding, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, because I probably am, but that's what people who misunderstand the idea of feminism think feminists want to see in their in their characters is perfect, great, powerful,
strong
female characters. Yes.
As opposed to strongly written female characters.
Yeah.
They have one strong female character.
Yeah, fallibilities are not anti-feminist.
Yeah, exactly.
Am I correct? Do I have that right?
There's this very good article which is actually called "I think we need more weak female characters." Which goes into that, and so we want female characters to have personalities, to have flaws, goals, ambition, and basically everything that male characters have.
Yeah, agency, something to strive towards, and not be perfect. You know, not spring forward fully.
Oh man, a really interesting article earlier, actually, which I don't know if it's the one you were talking about, Sprite. Writing Purple Women. Is anyone like that? I don't know. But yeah, it's basically about like formulating interesting female characters as opposed to strong female characters, and basically making them whole, well-rounded people and having more than one of them in the fucking story.
I mean, I think Kamala definitely fits that bill. You know, she is immensely fallible, and she recognizes her flaws and she wants to try and, but you know, we get to the end of the story and she she decides she would just really like to be somebody else to get away from the problems that being her involved.
And who hasn't done that? Who hasn't, like, I'm sure all four of us have at some point been like, do you know what, if I was a superhero, what would I do? What would I dress like? What would my superpowers be? Like, and she's just like that. She's like, she's a fan of comics, so of course she has those, like, fantasies, and that's extremely endearing and relatable. It's great to see. I think her character has some really interesting quirks. Like the scene where she's talking to Captain Marvel, at the end. I'm just trying to find it. And she's the side on panel, like the bottom of one of the pages, where she's being all like, "I would wear this costume that you wore, and I would fight like this." And she's just so like expressive and.
Oh yeah, she wants the heels. She wants the costume with the heels.
Yes. I laughed at that one. Because that was the better costume, dang it. It wasn't practical anyway, but...
bird next to her wearing a little furry hat. What is with the background?
Yeah, I just noticed...
I mean, Iron Man's holding a sloth, so, you know... Yeah.
That's a winged sloth that's in her room.
Yeah, I mean, at least the... Is it? Oh, you're in it. Oh, yeah.
I love that. I want that in my room.
I mean, at least that one's the fantasy
Porcupine
sequence.
Hands, and there's a fish on Captain America's shoulder. I did not notice this stuff the first time I met.
I did notice that, but yeah, I mean, if you go back and look where she's writing her fanfic, that stuffed sloth is actually in her room there.
It's basically the end of Labyrinth. It's just stuffed.
I mean, I noticed that, but I've just noticed, like, back when they're leaving the Circle Q, just before she has her fan, there's a shop next to Circle Q called Books and Ting An Books.
Uh-huh.
You need to reread this thing and look at the background completely.
That's what I do with More Than Meets the Eye. I read it one time and then I reread it again to look at all the little extra bits that have been drawn into the background, and that's always my favourite read through. Especially when Alex draws it, there's always like really cool extra stuff in the background.
Yeah. Well, I think that's one of the many ways in which this book appeals as well. It pays to reread it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I've read it four or five times now.
Sure.
Since yesterday.
Now you're just showing off with your.
Well, it's just the art has plays an important part of that, because it is lovely to look at just as a piece of art. Even if you're not interested in the story. But there's just so much to discover in it. Mm. So it really pays to reread it.
It reminds me slightly of, if anybody's read League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, Kevin O'Neill's work, both in terms of the sort of characters, their expressive faces, but yeah, all the weird little background details.
You need to go and open up annotations to follow League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
yes. No, yeah, not so much Ms. Marvel, but
no. That's just stuff. You know, just when we're talking about the audience and the access and the idea that people would be coming to this book off of the movies, it was something I thought about. Is that, you know, Sprite is that you guys aren't regular superhero comic book readers or anything, so you probably don't have any knowledge of what this mist is that surrounds her at the end when she gets her poison.
I googled it.
Yeah.
Damn you, the internet!
It's called Terrigen Mist.
That is correct, yes.
Which is related to Inhumans.
That's right, yep.
And...
But I think the great thing is that you don't... Do you know what this makes me think of? Maybe you've watched it and maybe you haven't. But you know Misfits, the E4 TV show?
Yeah.
How there's the storm and that's it. And
it doesn't need explaining.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair,
I know that this is like a crazy mess.
I've been reared on too many superhero comics. I did want an explanation for the storm, but I came to understand
from a newbie perspective. I'm not completely new to superheroes, but
you're not a regular reader, like you're not. Yeah.
No, I don't read like everything. I read like maybe X-Men, and odds and ends, and that's about it.
I have. Superhero comics in the past, mainly now movies and animated series are like what I go to for that.
Yeah, well, the Mist thing was something like where I was like, what's going on here?
See, that's interesting,
why does it affect her and not anybody else? And why is she the one being chosen for this or whatever? That was something that wasn't clear to me. But it doesn't really detract from the story.
See,
I think it was just something that was going to be explained later, so I just was like, well,
yeah, I'm sort of like that too.
I mean, that's the funny thing is that there's a lot of this happening across the Marvel Universe right now.
Yeah, the last couple of months have been pretty much nothing but mist.
All of this, yeah. I mean, so, you know, for the listeners at home, and so as y'all know, this is spinning out of the end of the recent Infinity crossover event, at the climax of which the Inhuman city of Atlan was blown up over New York. And the Terrigen Mists, which are the catalytic mist that activates the superpowers of this secret race of human offshoot beings known as the Inhumans, are spread out across the world. And we found out that many humans have latent Inhuman genes from millennia back of crossbreeding, and their powers are activating in there. And there have been lots of books that have been branded with like a tie-in banner on the cover for this Inhumanity thing that's happening, as and usually what it is that it's about the superhero in question facing off against or helping one of these people who have gained their new powers, or maybe they've become a villain with their new powers, or they want to do good with their new powers or whatever. And I think it's very telling that this elected not to do that, because this is a book that's very aware of who will be reading it. It does its best not to bog it down in things that'll make you ask, what? Why? Where's that?
Yeah,
know,
I think
there's
very
no, you know, there's no asterisk C infinity number 6 for the origin of this mist, Simper and Stan. There's none of that. It's very open and accessible. I mean, like we were talking about the point one storyline, one of several short stories that was in Marvel's All New Point One, and that's set a little further forward. That's after she's got her costume and is actually out fighting a bit of crime. And that's obviously done with a view to being probably collected in the first trade along with the first story arc of the comic. Even though they did a short story starring her before the launch of the first issue, they were very careful not to make it required reading. It's set later than this. Compare that, say, with Temple, you'll know what I'm talking about here again, with the Loki story, where the framing sequence, the Loki story in Marvel.
Yeah, it's a direct prologue.
It's a prologue. It shows him getting a magic sword, and then he's got the magic sword in issue one of his own book, and there is a box that says, check out all new Marvel 9.1 to see where Loki got this magic sword. And I'm like, I thought this was issue one, bitch. But this book sidesteps that, you know, in addition to
it can stand alone.
And it really, really can.
Yeah.
If you've never read any superhero comic or even seen any superhero movie in your life, you could read this and not feel as though you were missing
something. Yeah, being punished for not reading other books.
Which I think that's something that's really important, actually, because I remember when I first started trying to read superhero comics when I was, like, 14, 15, the reason I couldn't find my in was because I was just like, there's so much and I don't know where to start, and there's years and years of history and they all expect you to know what happened in this issue in 1984 and like all this stuff, and it's just so like overwhelming sometimes. But this, you could read this having never read any superhero comic.
And you know, you would I think you're maybe expected to be a little like Sprite, you're being puzzled at this mysterious mist is a natural reaction, but it's an origin story. You know, the facts will come in later.
Yeah, and I think because Kamala's your point of view character, I think you're supposed to be as puzzled as she is.
Yeah.
So it sort of works with the story.
It's also that this the way this first issue was set up. It's pretty simple. It gets the job done. Like, you basically got your introduction of the main character. Supporting cast, the internal struggle, personal problems, and the acquisition of the powers. And that's where the book ends, and I really like that setup. But the appeal of it is her whole personal situation and the interaction with the character. And I really like that in a superhero story, that this is an ordinary person dealing with extraordinary powers. And still dealing with her own world, with her own life.
And that's very much territory that Marvel pioneered.
Yeah, that's Peter Parker.
That's
like
to a T. You know, even going back to the Fantastic Four, where they were maybe not normal people, you know, brilliant scientists, hotshot test pilot, but they were presented as people who were real people. They had real personalities. They didn't always get along with one another. And Peter Parker was, you know, definitely the figurehead of that idea. As I said, they tried a couple of times over the intervening decades to do new versions of the characters. But Kamala is one that I think has really, really landed home like nobody else really has. She's Miss Marvel because Marvel don't bring out new names. She's Miss Marvel because Carol Danvers is Captain Marvel. That means the Miss Marvel name is free, so we'll attach it to this character.
It's a clever way of like sidestepping the whole all characters don't do well thing, because it's like, well, she is a new character, but she's got an old character's name, so she's still got the branding behind her.
I really like that she's basically Miss Marvel because she's an Avengers fan.
Yeah.
Because Carol Danvers is like her hero and she wants to be just like her, and that's why she's Miss Marvel. Because I didn't really know how to interpret that sequence with Carol Danvers and the other two, Iron Man and Captain Marvel.
Yeah, that one did, I'll be honest, like that disarmed me a little bit. After they'd been playing the whole Islam aspect of the thing to frame such universal themes, when Miss Marvel, Captain Marvel descended from the heavens singing in Urdu, I was like, whoa!
I figured
that was just pure hallucination.
Totally.
The influence of the mist, and because she's such a big Avengers fan, that's how the whole transformation got mm-hmm. framed, basically. It's her subconscious interpretation of what's going on or something, I don't know.
And, we don't even really get a good sense of what Kamala's powers are in this issue. I mean, spoilers. At the end of the issue, she says to this hallucination of Captain Marvel, she says, I want to be beautiful and awesome and butt-kicking and less complicated. I want to be you. And then at the end of the issue, you see her punch her way out of her inhuman cocoon, which is a standard feature of these transformations. And she comes out and she's suddenly white and blonde and wearing Miss Marvel's costume. And she's suddenly
regrets it. I don't think she's white. I think she's just blonde. Skin doesn't look any
white.
Sure.
It's the light.
Blonde hair does look really... It's like, oh my god.
That is blonde. Yeah, I'm not sure. She might... Well, and that's because her powers are shapeshifting. That's what she's done here. We can construe. We know her powers are shapeshifting from the Point One storyline. Spoilers if you haven't read that. You know, there's one character in here we haven't talked about, though, that I do think we have to give a moment over to talk about, and that's Zoe. I really liked how they went for the jugular with this one.
Yeah.
Because they didn't whip out some kind of straw man racist character to create a counterpoint and go, oh, don't be, you are stupid and racism is bad and hooray for our heroine.
That is a very real person who doesn't necessarily actually mean
no, but it's like, oh my slight. God, you have so much culture.
Yeah. No, that's a person I've encountered people like that. Lots of people I know have encountered people like that. And it's almost like a more frustrating kind of racism in a way, because it's someone who just doesn't understand why what they're saying isn't okay. And they're just like, oh, I'm just complimenting you. And it's like, no, you don't really understand.
Yeah, no, that's it. In her first appearance, like when she says to Kamala's friend Nakia, she compliments her on her headscarf, and then immediately goes, but nobody pressured you to wear you that, right? That's not.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not going to get honor killed, are you?
Honor, yeah. And then she says, no, she's actually wearing it of her own volition, and her parents actually don't want her to wear it. Oh, how interesting. Bitch.
But yeah, again, it's not necessarily that she actually is like, she's not like bullying them, she doesn't mean to. It's so she's still like almost an endearing character in a way, because she's just so like doesn't understand
clueless.
How clueless she is. Yeah. And that scene is so funny.
And then you get that one bit where they go to the party and everything, they try to get her to drink some vodka and everything. And then she goes, no offense, but you smell like curry. I'm going to stand somewhere else. And I was like, oh, that's the line. That is the line.
Yeah, that was the moment when I was kind of like, okay, yeah, you are a bitch.
Yeah. Somebody punch her. That was the point when we get, how clueless is she? Because there's no way, nobody starts a sentence that says, with no offense, and then follows it up with that. Knowing that that's going to offend somebody. That's not just some clueless interest in her culture. That's something. Yeah.
I don't know
about that.
But yeah.
But she's interesting in that she's the bully character. She's the Flash Thompson of this Peter Parker analogy. Then she's not at the same time. It's a different kind of thing. It's a kind of, you know, forgive my generalization, but it's like a girl bullying. You know, it's not somebody
it's
pushing you.
It's
yeah,
oh my
mean
God, that's the most fugly skirt I've ever seen in my life. Like
stop trying to make fetch happen.
Yeah.
That's it. It's mean girl style stuff, you know, whereas like Peter Parker deals with a very simple, direct jock bullies nerd. This teenage heroine deals with the teenage girl bully, the mean girl who how do they describe her? Nice nasty. I know it's not in the comic. That's a term I heard somewhere. She's nasty nice.
Yeah. Frenemies.
She's only nice to be mean.
Yeah, that's how.
I think that's how they put it.
I felt whenever she described it like that, that kind of ascribed more malice to her than she seemed to be displaying.
Yeah.
Right up until the curry line.
yeah, definitely. The curry line was a bit of a sort of like, whoa.
Whoa,
okay.
Step back there, lady. Right, well, I think we've probably covered all the major points about this book. We'll go through for some closing remarks then, maybe, on the issue. Bright, do you want to go first?
Oh, again?
Well, I'm going left to right across my screen.
Well, I was already going to pick this up in the trade, and I'm only looking forward to that more. this is just an amazingly good comic.
Is it?
Yeah, I think I've already subscribed. Looking up like all the next issues, I think it's most importantly, it's a really, really well written and well drawn comic, and it's really funny and it's really good. But also it has another level of importance because of Kamala's cultural background and all of that kind of stuff. So yeah, I think just all around it's a really good book, and the fact that Kamala is a Pakistani character in such a good book is really, really, that makes me really happy. So yeah, I want everyone to read it.
Basically exactly the same thing. It's in many different ways. It's quite an important book. But I wouldn't say read it because of that. I'd say read it because it's a damn fine comic. You know, great writing, great art. You know, check it out.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect summation from everybody there. It's good that the book exists at all because of what that represents. But it's even better that it's actually a really good comic by any standard.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and this has been getting universally good reviews across the board and all the comics review sites. And entirely justified. I know I'm going to be pushing this pretty hard on people of every age and gender at my store. Whether they'll listen to me or not, that's another matter. But the posters are up. Well, I think that'll bring things to an end for this special episode of Fanboy Versus. This look at Ms. Marvel number one. Fanboy Versus may return at some point in the future. We may have more special episodes if books like this keep coming out that are worth talking about. But for now, go read Ms. Marvel. Enjoy it. Hope you enjoyed the show. And we'll see you next time, wherever and whenever that may be. Bye. Everybody say bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to a special episode of Fanboy Versus, part of the TF Radio Network. For more episodes or our library of other shows, visit tfradio.net. Have a question or comment? Leave it on our Facebook fan page or mail it to contact@tfradio.net. And please consider visiting tfradio.net/JD to contribute.